Sullivan Fortner is an immensely talented pianist who has been getting plenty of attention on the jazz scene with both live performances and his successful debut, Aria on Impulse. This summer, he'll be performing at the Newport Jazz Festival, but he's now in the Czech Republic as part of the American Spring Music Festival. When I met with him at Czech Radio this week, my first question for Sullivan was about his background growing up in New Orleans.
I come from a family of singers, not really a whole lot of instrumentalists, but singers, especially in church. Church is really where I got my start. My mom was in the choir as choir director, all my sisters sing, and, you know, and I had a crush on the organist growing up. One day I was about 3 years old and she let me sit on her lap and tap out some stuff on the organ, and I remembered some of the stuff she tapped out. So I would tap out on the television. I'd climb on top of the television and tap out stuff on the banister or whatever. And my mom got tired of me doing that, so she bought me one of those little Fisher-Price pianos. And one day it was a theme song that came on television called Jeopardy, and I was able to play the melody off of one or two hearings.
I'll take famous jazz standards for $500.
Exactly. Uh-huh. All on the little keyboard. And that was how I got started.
Now, you received a formal education in piano, several scholarships for a number of jazz, summer jazz programs. You completed a master's degree in jazz performance at the Manhattan School of Music.
Mm-hmm.
I know that you've talked about the importance of, for example, studying musicians who came before, understanding their music and the instrument in the context of the time. What were some of the important lessons learned?
I think that any student, period, whether it be in the arts, music, drama, dance, you have to have some sort of understanding of what came before for a couple of reasons. One, so that you don't make the same mistakes as the people who came before. You create a certain type of awareness, and it gives you more things to draw from. Mm-hmm. In your own creative way of doing things, you know.
You go through the process, and that's part of your own development.
Absolutely.
Which performers were, for example, influential for you, maybe when you were getting your start?
In my start in jazz, I would probably say the first person that I heard was Duke Ellington. I didn't really think too much of it, though. You know, it was like 12 years old, and I was just like, oh, Duke Ellington. Well, somebody said, take the A-Train or whatever. So it's like, okay, cool. And then somebody told me to get a Herbie Hancock record, a guy named Peter Martin who plays with Diane Reeves, who's my first piano teacher ever. And he told me to check out Theme from Blow Up. So I was like, okay, Herbie Hancock, Theme from Blow Up. Okay, got it. Now what? I still wasn't too enthusiastic about it. So I said, well, okay, listen to John Coltrane. I was like, all right, I don't understand. It sounds like hieroglyphics to me. I have no idea what this language is. It sounds really strange, so whatever. Leave it alone. Then I had a teacher that told me, check out Errol Garner. And then that was when the light bulb hit. So Errol Garner, then Oscar Peterson. To me, those were the first two pianists I heard, and was like, boing, yong, 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 yong. And then Art Tatum, and then it pretty much sealed the deal for me. I started jazz and classical at the same time at my high school, New Orleans Center for Creative Arts. I knew classical music was great, but I knew that, you know, because of my gospel background, I couldn't bend and fluctuate and improvise as much as I could have, you know, say in gospel. Mm-hmm. You know, so I kind of didn't really take the classical very much as far as a piano, as far as a performer goes. But I listened to it regularly. I love the music. Jazz and classical kind of go hand in hand in a lot of ways. It's the same language.
If we still talk about school a little bit, are, say, lifelong friendships formed at school, people that you end up playing with later on, or do you just meet people along the way? Because I know you've played for a lot of great bands, for a lot of notable musicians.
Yeah, it's actually funny because, you know, while you're in school and you're meeting and you're playing with these guys or cutting class with them or going to get food or, you know, whatever, you never think that these are relationships that you're going to have with people for the rest of your life. And I know guys from high school, like the first gig I ever got as a jazz musician was through Christian Scott, who's a well-known trumpet player in the scene. And Troy Trombone Shorty Andrews, who plays trombone and all instruments, who toured with Lenny Kravitz and has his own thing going, which is really great. And one of my high school buddies, who later went off to Juilliard, and you know, who's the musical director for the Steve Colbert Show, Jonathan Batiste. We used to practice Oscar Peterson together, and you know, all that stuff. And then that goes on through college, and you know, people like Theo Croker, and you know, graduate school. I still maintain a lot of those relationships. Are definitely very, very influential and helped me in my career, the beginnings of it, or whatever you want to call it.
You've played, of course, in many different groups, including with Roy Hargrove.
Mm-hmm.
What is it like to play when you're a member of an ensemble and there is a band leader? Is it different playing for different band leaders? Do they have different styles, different demands, if I can put it that way?
Yes, absolutely. I would say that a majority of the band leaders that I've had, they don't really demand much other than to just bring what I bring to the table. As far as material, though, and how they present material is different. Say a musician like Roy Hargrove, there's no sheet music, so everything's learned by ear, as opposed to other musicians that I've worked with in the past, you know, or, and you know, presently, that actually have sheet music and we have rehearsals and you know things like that. So it's a little bit different, but technically, people are just like, all right, here's the cheap music. You here's the tune. Go ahead and do what you do with it. You know,
that's part of the joy, though, isn't it? When you are performing, and you kind of go off, not necessarily off track, but you are following your own thread, your own thing. Say when you're performing a solo, or when it's your turn, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And it is about communication between yourself and the others in the group, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's really mostly listening. I think the key to playing jazz is really just listening and being interactive.
In that interview that you did for Voice of America,
mm-hmm.
You talked about the fact that solo was not always an option.
Mm-hmm.
I also know that you have your own trio.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Prague, will you be performing solo, or is it the trio that's playing?
I will be performing. I'll be doing both. I'll be doing, you know, like tonight I'm playing solo at the American Ambassador's house. The rest of the gigs is with a trio.
Your very first album was released on Impulse.
Mm-hmm.
It was a balance of jazz standards as well as original compositions.
Mm-hmm.
Because you are a composer as well. What standards are part of your repertoire?
There's a lot of songs that, you know, I've kind of accumulated. Not as many as I'd like to, and probably not as many as most. But there are a lot of songs that I've kind of accumulated by playing with different people or doing different jam sessions, being in different scenarios in New York and abroad, you know, playing with singers. So I really love jazz standards. So it's kind of hard to say which tunes I'm probably going to draw from, especially on solo concerts. But I will say that you'll definitely hear some stuff from Thelonious Monk. You'll definitely hear some stuff from Cole Porter. You'll definitely hear some stuff from Gershwin. You may hear some stuff from Richard Rodgers and Frank Lesser and Kurt Weill. And I mean, there's just so many great American composers that I try to draw from.
I mentioned before that we were going to talk about some of the cities or the venues that you enjoy coming back to. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of great American cities and venues, New York
mm-hmm.
being one of the big ones. Are there particular places that you love performing?
I was just there, actually, maybe 2-3 weeks ago. I played the Village Vanguard in New York. And for any jazz musician in New York, if you haven't played the Village Vanguard, I definitely would highly recommend something go on over there for you, because Village Vanguard is beautiful. It's such a rich history. Everybody's played on that stage, and the sound of the place is incredible. You can hear everything so clearly, and it's really, really great place to play. As far as other cities and places abroad, I enjoy playing in Japan, Tokyo in particular. South Korean audiences are great to play in front of. They're very, very enthusiastic. They yell and, you know, carry on. France, Paris is really, really cool. Germany, certain spots in Germany are really, really nice to play. I really like playing at the A-Train Jazz Club. It's a really nice place. I like the Czech Republic. I've been here maybe in this country maybe about 3 or 4 times at least, and it's always been really, really great to play here.